from the island of Corfu and brought to you on amazing affiliates, Max Sports Channels, Talk Superstation, Armed Forces Radio, BaseballPodcast.net, First Online Radio, Cosmic Radio, and WRFN 1025. This is The Phil Nason Show.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome to The Phil Nason Show, the international sports show with the local sports radio flavor. I'm Phil Nason, and I'm the host of this daily sports show. And I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen from wherever you are. I've got a great show planned for you today. Mark Berman will join us later to talk New York Mets hot stove baseball. Lots of stuff happening there. But up first, from AthleticsNation.com, please welcome their lead writer and my friend, Mr. Alex Hall, for a long chat about the American, or I would say, I'm sorry, the Oakland Athletics and the American League West. Alex, welcome to the show. How are you doing, man?
The AL West is getting wild again.
It sure is, dude. It sure is. You know what? It's amazing to me how many moves Billy Bean has made. But I guess what we can do is let's start with the trade between your main guy, I thought for sure would be the top gun of all time for a long time, I should say. Brent Anderson went to the Rockies.
Well, I mean, that's certainly the big move for the A's. There were some bigger ones in the AL West, but yeah, that's the A's big move of the week. Now, remember last week as we were signing off, I told you that this week we were going to be talking about Brett Anderson's trade and what the A's got back, and I was getting worried that it wasn't going to happen before the show, but they just pulled it off on Tuesday just in time to make me look smart. So thank you, Billy Bean, for making me look smart. Anderson goes to the Rockies. So like you said, he seems like a guy that should maybe be the big gun. But there's a problem with Brett Anderson, and A's fans have seen this before with Rich Harden. And that is, all the talent in the world doesn't mean anything if you never get to use it. And Anderson, for as excellent of a pitcher as he is, he just can't stay healthy. And it's been – the problem may be systemic. It's not one of these things like with Jed Lowry, where for a few years he missed a bunch of time with these sort of random fluky injuries. With Anderson, he's actually an injury-prone guy. He seems like kind of a fragile guy. He's missed a ton of time over the last 3 years. He was having some elbow and forearm problems a few years ago, and then – in 2011, that turned into Tommy John surgery. So he missed about a half a season after he had that operation. And then that takes, you know, that recovery goes into the next year. So for 2012, he misses the first half of that year too, coming back from that. Then he came back and he was good. Oh, but now he strains an oblique and he misses the end of the 2012 season. Comes back in 2013, looks like he might finally be healthy again. But there's a problem in his mechanics with the foot that he lands on, and he ends up spraining his ankle very severely between that and some awkward fielding plays. And then he misses another 3 or 4 months with this severely sprained ankle. And you look and you say, these aren't necessarily random accidents. This is a guy who has maybe a problem in his mechanics or just a general, his arm couldn't hold up to the rigors of pitching this much. And he's young enough where you can still say, hey, he can put these things behind him and move on to a good career. That's why he has trade value. But at the same time, if you're the win now A's, you're sitting here thinking, do we want to pin any hopes at all on basically Rich Harden version 2.0, the guy who is fantastic when he's pitching, but he rarely ever is. And Anderson really is that good. He has excellent control when he's right, when he's healthy. He keeps a very low walk rate. He has increased his ground ball rate quite a bit over the last few years. And he can miss some bats. He doesn't rack up a ton of strikeouts, but he'll get his fair share. He'll at least be average in that sense. So you can see where he's got trade value, especially to a team like the Rockies, who isn't going to attract a big name pitcher. No pitcher's going to sign there. And also, they don't have a ton of money to spend to go get a big sure thing name. So for them to pull kind of this lottery ticket in Anderson, who could pan out and be very good, or maybe he's hurt again and he's no good. Well, they have to take a chance like that. Much like the A's, the Rockies are a team that needs to take risks and hope for high reward to hit a couple of jackpots and have that be where they pull up their undervalued talent. So you can see where the Rockies might want a ground ball specialist with control. That makes sense. So in return, they sent the A's another type of lottery ticket, but this was a different one. Anderson is the injury lottery ticket, where will he be healthy enough to be as good as we know he is? The A's get Drew Pomeranz, who is more of the talent lottery ticket. Great draft pedigree. I think he was a number 5 overall pick by the Indians. He's already been traded once for Ubaldo Jimenez, the first time that Ubaldo Jimenez was really good. So this is the second time he's been traded for a very, very good veteran starter. However, he was not handled very well in Colorado, starting with just the fact that, again, he was in Colorado, which is a tough place to develop as a pitcher. It's going to affect not only your confidence in getting hit a little bit harder in the hitter's park, but it can also affect the break on your pitches. And a guy like Pomeranz, who's got a big curveball, I don't know, does that affect his big curveball? Maybe. So he struggled coming up with the Rockies. He had some very poor major league trials and sort of seemed to regress overall. Even in the minors, he took a step back a little bit. And so you look and you say, this guy who just 18 months ago, this guy was considered one of the top 20 or 30 prospects in all of baseball. He's still a 6'5 left-hander with a big curveball, and he can throw his fastball in the 90s. And there's a good start to a scouting report for a guy you might want. So the question is, can the A's, between their coaching staff, whatever pitching philosophies have worked so well for so many guys before him, plus that pitcher's park in Oakland, can they turn Pomeranz around and realize that untapped potential? So you've got both teams with a totally different kind of lotto ticket, which is kind of makes it a very interesting trade, because they almost traded the same thing, two 25-year-old left-handed starters. And yet when you look deeper, there's so much different. It's also a little bit of a salary dump for the A's. They've picked up a lot of salary with Scott Kazmir and Jim Johnson. So they're shedding just a little bit of that now to make up. Anderson was due $8 million and $1.5 million for a buyout of next year's option. They send a couple of million with them, but they're still shedding quite a bit of salary there. And they're taking a flyer on a less experienced pitcher who has 5 more years of team control versus Anderson, who is under team control this year and has a more expensive option for next year. So the A's, they're not getting younger, but they're getting cheaper, and they're getting more team control for a different kind of lottery ticket. It's a very interesting trade, and we won't know who won this one for at least another year.
You're probably right. I'll tell you something, though. This kid Pomeranz, he might turn out to be okay, though. You know, if he gets in the right system, he might be all right. He's had some major league starts. He pitched a lot in 2012. I think he's going to be all right. This other kid that you picked up, Chris Jansen, I think you can flip him at some point. He's still only 23. He's a sixth-round pick. He's still someone that they were high on. But, boy, that was an interesting one. I didn't think that they would part with Brett Anderson for so cheap. But then again, you have to do what you got to do. And we've got to move on because there's more stuff to talk about. Jerry Blevins has been traded to the Washington Nationals for Billy Burns. Speedy Billy Burns. Not to be confused with the Bill Burns who set up the Washington Black Sox scandal, but Jerry Blevins is no longer an A. That probably left some people shaking their heads as well, right?
I actually am not that surprised. I kind of had a feeling that Blevins might get traded. The A's don't usually keep their relief pitchers very deep into their arbitration years. I believe Blevins can be a free agent at the end of the season, so he wasn't a long-term asset anymore. He'd put in a lot of great years for the A's, but you got to start paying him now. He's actually still not that expensive. I think he still might be cheaper than $2 million, but the bullpen was already pretty stacked, very crowded, and crowded with other guys who were out of options. So you couldn't stash them down in AAA. You had to deal from this position of strength, or else you would lose someone for free. And that someone could have been Fernando Abad, who they acquired earlier in the offseason. We already talked about him. He's out of options, but he's a very solid left-hander. He's very comparable, I think, to Blevins. We'll see how that turns out. But now you have space for Abad on the team. Whereas if he was cut after spring training, he'd go through waivers and someone else would pick him up and you'd lose him. So I was a big fan of Blevins. He's a very solid reliever, pretty reliable, good guy. But something had to give, something had to go out of that bullpen, and I kind of had a feeling it was going to be him. I don't yet know anything about Billy Burns that the A's got back, because this just happened less than an hour ago. But I'm not that shocked to see Blevins go. I'm a little bummed because he's one of my personal favorites. He's one of the longest tenured players on the A's. But just like with Anderson, I had a feeling like this one was going to happen sometime this winter. We'll miss him, but the bullpen is still stacked.
Well, you know, from what I've learned, and I did some research with Billy Burns, and this is a kid who can fly. His greatest asset are his wheels. He's very, very good at this. He stole 74 bases in 2013 combined with two teams in high A ball and double A ball. He had 54 in high A in 91 games. And in 30 games, he had 20 stolen bases in double A. So there's the type of guy you'd want. You're not going to get any power out of him. He walks quite a bit. He actually walks more than he strikes out, which is very good. It means he has a very good eye. He probably won't be more than a fourth or fifth outfielder in Oakland, only because they have so much and so much depth. But there's a guy you can use, probably like the Cincinnati Reds used Billy Hamilton this season. So you never know. But honestly, to me, Washington's just silly. That's their number fourth or sixth ranked prospect in the organization. It's just another step in dismantling their organization for instant help.
And the other thing about that, Abad came from the Nationals earlier in the year. He got squeezed out in a little roster shuffle. So you can kind of look at it as the Nationals sent Abad and Burns for Blevins and whatever minor league filler the A sent back for Abad. And again, Abad, I don't know that much about him, but his numbers look pretty solid, and he seems like a totally capable replacement for Blevins. So this is one where a couple of transactions go down, and you look at what Billy Beane got back, and you're like, wait, what? The A's still have Abad and Doolittle as lefties in the pen. There's still two very solid lefties there. I'll miss Blevins, but we dealt from a strength there.
Yep, you certainly did. Now, I'll tell you what, this one was an intriguing trade. This happened, I guess, on Tuesday, but this one really tripped me out. The Los Angeles Angels, the Chicago White Sox, and the Arizona Diamondbacks pulled a three-way team trade. The Angels sent Mark Trumbo to Arizona. Adam Eaton went to Chicago, and pitchers Hector Santiago and Tyler Skaggs are now with the Los Angeles Angels. Crazy, crazy things. Adam Eaton was like their number one prospect. They ditched this kid. And, well, wound up with Mark Trumbo. What did you think about that move?
Well, I'm going to focus on just the Angel side of this in the interest of time, except to say that, my goodness, I just don't understand what Kevin Towers ever does in Arizona. I don't get this trade at all for the Diamondbacks. I'm just going to leave them alone. For the Angels, unfortunately, I really like this trade. The Angels had one goal in this offseason, and that was deal some of their outfield depth to plug the other holes on the team. And that's exactly what they've done. A few weeks ago, we talked about trading Peter Borges to fill their third base hole with David Freese. Solid idea. Now they've traded Trumbo to fill up the holes in their rotation, which was a huge need for the team. They needed more starting pitchers, because after Jared Weaver and CJ Wilson, there was Garrett Richards, who had a bit of a breakout second half last year, and that was really it. And that starting pitching was a big problem for them last year. But now they've added a couple interesting names. They've added Tyler Skaggs. He's a very top prospect for the Diamondbacks. His stock has fallen just a little bit lately to where he's no longer sort of that sure thing. Well, it's never a sure thing, but he's no longer seen as that really sure thing that he once was. And so they might have bought low a little bit on him. And then Hector Santiago from the White Sox, just another solid young pitcher with some team control. He'll be kind of cheap, which might be a big deal for a team with a lot of long-term contracts right now. But it gives them some warm bodies with some upside in that rotation. They don't have to worry about what minor league scrub they're going to bring up or what washed-up veteran they're going to sign for $10 million, because now they've pulled two promising young pitchers who were very, very cheap and, like I said, have some upside. So the Angels have gone out and addressed these needs, but what have they lost? They still have an outfield with Josh Hamilton and Mike Trout. That's a pretty good start. They have a few interesting players to fill up that third spot, like Cole Calhoun, Shuck, who was playing some left field last year. So their outfield is still fine, and they still have Pujols to play first base or to DH or whatever they want. And I'm sure if they want to pick up another cheap hitter somewhere, they can. But they have dealt from that position of strength to fill the other needs. And you had to already figure the Angels were a bounce-back candidate just because that much talent isn't likely to play poorly like that 2 years in a row. And they came on a bit at the end of the year as well, if you remember. They were already a bounce-back candidate, kind of like the Red Sox had been last year. Now they're definitely a bounce-back because they've stocked up that rotation with a couple of arms, and they've just been filling the holes. I could still see them maybe going after another catcher, possibly, but as it is, they're a very improved team this winter.
Yeah, they are. You know what, though? Because I follow the National League pretty well. I don't know what Arizona was thinking. Where are they going to put Mark Trumbo? He's a first.
They're going to put him in left field.
Oh, my Lord. That's not good. Nope. You know what? They already had a left fielder. His last name was Upton. They got rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid, Trumbo, he can hit. But he needs to play first base. He's a liability in the outfield. He's terrible. Adam Eaton, though. This is intriguing. The White Sox wound up, or the Diamondbacks wound up with a, or I guess they did pretty well. Adam Eaton's going to be really good in Chicago. And honestly, wow. This is just nuts when you sit down and think about it. Really crazy. I don't know.
That's a wild trade. Like I said, I don't get what Arizona was thinking unless they get a couple of really good prospects as the players to be named later. So I guess it's not done yet. But they just traded some youth for a one-dimensional power hitter who can't play defense, isn't anything special on the base paths, can't get on base or hit for any kind of batting average. He's got a career 299 on base percentage, and it's only 300 over the last, I think, 3 years combined. He hits homers, and he'll do that in Arizona, but he still makes a lot of outs, and those homers come at a great cost, and they've come at an even bigger cost in talent. I don't understand what Arizona ever does, ever.
I'll say, yeah, because Adam Eaton, boy, he's got an upside that's nuts.
But I'll tell you what, though, the rest of the AL West is getting a little bit scary because it's not just the A's and Angels. Every team here is adding. We haven't even gotten into Robinson Cano. No need to get too deep into that. Of course, 10 years, $240 million with the Mariners. Say what you will about the wisdom of 10-year contracts and the wisdom of $200 million. And I will say that those are both pretty bad ideas. But in the short term, they've added a fantastic player. They've added a great second baseman. They're going to add wins to that team with Cano in the lineup. And now Nick Franklin, their young second baseman from last year, is available in a trade. The Mariners signed Corey Hart today to play in their outfield or maybe to DH, whatever they want to do with him. Hart is another big-time power hitter. He missed all of last year with a knee surgery. But, again, if he can come back right, he's a guy that's hit 30 homers in two of his last three seasons playing for the Brewers. So he's got the big time power. He's got decent on base skills. And I mean, he's nothing special in the field, but he can play some first base, maybe play some outfield. And they had a big hole in the outfield. So they've now added two big-time hitters in addition to their already strong pitching staff. And news has come out that David Price says that if he does get traded to the Mariners, he won't sign an extension with them. So I have to think the Mariners are probably out of the running for David Price. You never know, but I just don't see it happening, you know, which sucks for them because they definitely had the pieces to make that happen. They already have that rotation with Felix Hernandez, Hisashi Iwakuma, Taijuan Walker, James Paxton coming up. They've got the pitchers. Now they've got a couple of big-time hitters finally. And, you know, you look around, they're pretty strong up the middle. They've got Cano. They've got their big catching prospect that came up last year. We'll see if Dustin Ackley can remember how to hit again in center field. That's where he's playing now. They still got Kyle Seager with some power at third. So they've got these interesting young players all over, and now they have the centerpieces to build around. So these guys like Ackley and Justin Smoke, they don't need to be the highlight guys anymore. Cano can take on that role. Hart can take on that role. And these guys can develop quietly over on the side here and sort of go about their business. They don't have to be the focus anymore. So Mariners also having a pretty good offseason here. The Rangers, we've already been over the old Prince Fielder trade. I expect to see the Rangers sign another outfielder. Right now their outfield is Michael Choice, Leonis Martin, and Alex Rios. Rios, I love in right field, very underrated. Martin is almost all glove right now in center. And do you really see the Rangers starting Michael Choice, the rookie, as their A plan, their number one plan in left field? I don't. I have a feeling they're going to bring Nelson Cruz back. Shin-Soo Chu is still out there. I think the Rangers are going to sign another outfielder. We'll see about that. And even the Astros are getting better. They've picked up Dexter Fowler in center field. They signed Scott Feldman, a very solid, underrated starting pitcher, to help anchor that rotation. You look up the middle, you've still got Jason Castro, their catcher. He was fantastic last year, very underrated. Jose Altuve, their second baseman, we know he's got some talent. Now they've got Fowler in center field. He's got some pop. He can play some, I believe he plays some defense. He's got a little bit of speed. Now they've got at least one veteran starter. They picked up DJ Qualls in their bullpen. And you start to look and you can see where they're starting to form a team that maybe doesn't lose 111 games anymore. Maybe they lose 100. Maybe they lose 90. But you got to start improving sometime. And the Diamondbacks are the Astros are slowly doing that. They're not wasting a bunch of money on long-term commitments or anything like that. But they're spending a little bit. And again, now those young players can start to develop around some of this infrastructure they're putting up. Brad Peacock had a very quietly solid second half last year in the rotation. So are they suddenly going to have a couple of solid starting pitchers? We'll see. But even the Astros look like they will maybe no longer be an embarrassment in the AL West. So that whole division is just getting stronger and scarier. More and more star players are finding their way in there. All these teams are plugging up their weaknesses. It's going to be a tough division this year.
Well, it was a tough division last year, but the thing is, Robinson Cano, that's a lot of money, man. $240 million, 10 years. Wow. He broke the bank, but that's a long contract to hold, a really long one to hold. Now, honestly, I think that the team that has done the best, honestly, are the Oakland A's. Okay. The Angels got a little better, but the A's filled in all their holes and aren't going to miss a beat. And honestly, like the Diamondbacks, oh, silliness. Chicago White Sox, watch out for the White Sox now. This Eaton kid can play. But anyway, great stuff tonight, Alex. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right, that was Alex Hall, and you can find him at athleticsnation.com. Coming up next, Mark Berman will be here from bloggingmets.com to talk all about the Granderson acquisition and a whole bunch more. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Stitcher Smart Radio, is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody
get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at AridiHotel.com or email them at reservations@AridiHotel.com. Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends, and in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, and joining me to talk New York Mets hot stove baseball, and we've got plenty to talk about. Please welcome from BloggingMets.com, my friend Mark Berman is in the house. Mark, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show once again, eh?
Yes, always good to be here.
Always good to be here. 25 minutes turns into 3 hours.
That's true.
Good Lord. Technology is a beautiful thing when it works.
Yes.
Boy, oh boy. Anyway. The New York Mets fan base erupted with the signing of Curtis Granderson. You were pretty happy about that too, right?
I was and still am.
Okay. I will see. For me, I don't like to spend that kind of money on guys over 30. Do you know what I mean? I have one of those issues, especially 4 years, especially when a guy didn't play almost an entire season. Okay, they were freak injuries. But, the team is a lot better with Curtis Granderson patrolling probably right field, right?
Yeah, much, much better. I mean, I agree. I've written so many times about how I don't like signing guys over age 35. And Granderson is 32, I believe. And I would have rather this been a 3-year contract rather than a 4-year contract, because that fourth year he'll be 36. So, but if they needed to do the extra year, then I was all for it. The $15 million a year, I think, is appropriate. I don't think it's too much or too little in today's market. But, yeah, I'm happy. The Mets needed power. They needed another outfielder after last year's joke of an outfield. So, yeah, I think this is overall just a really good signing.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Last year they had Colin Cowgill.
Yes, starting outfielder Colin Cowgill.
And everybody jumped up and down like the World Series was won when he won, when the game was over opening day anyway, when he hit that grand slam. Yeah. Went, oh, and I said, hey, wait another month. You should listen to my show, what Alex says about him, and he knows better than we do. Anyway, right. Yeah, 4 years, tough. I don't know, man. But the Grandy man is here, and, well, it is interesting. It's, you know what's interesting, though, is listening to people defend Curtis Granderson, who a year ago, that damn Yankee. I don't get it. You know what? He's still Curtis Granderson. And it's probably his best years are behind him.
Probably. I don't think he'll hit 40 homers again. You know, coming from Yankee Stadium to Citi Field, I don't think that's going to translate to 40. But if he hits 30, and I think he has a very good chance of hitting 30, you know, for the next 2-3 years, I think that's great. I think it'd be well worth it.
I think you're right. Honestly, if he hits 25, I'll probably be happy. It won't be worth the $15 million, of course, but it's better than what it was. It's a very expensive Band-Aid on a very broken arm, something that probably needs surgery. But he's better than what they had, I guess. And that's kind of sad to say for a big market baseball club who I remember used to spend $160, $180 million a year on payroll. Now they spend like 75 or 80.
Yeah. They're not acting like a big market club. I mean, they're acting like the San Diego Padres. They're, you know, oh, we can't spend money on this. We can't, you know, we can't compete for free agents. It's a joke. And I don't know if that is ever going to change. I really don't. I mean, allegedly, all the Madoff thing is over and the money's all cleared up and blah, blah, blah. But it's the same thing. They just keep cutting payroll. So I don't know what's going to happen here. But given the Mets payroll limitations, I think signing Granderson was a good deal.
Okay, that's fair enough. I don't know, man. You know, when I look at this, Fangraphs has a spray chart of batted balls. Mm-hmm. He's a dead pull hitter. You know, he took advantage of that short porch and right. You know, people, he hit a lot of line drives out of there, though. I mean, he gets the ball out of there in a hurry.
Yeah, and from what Yankee fans are saying, he doesn't hit little cheap 314-foot homers that just drop over the wall in Yankee Stadium. He hits bombs. So those bombs would be out at Citi Field at, you know, at 330 feet. And if you look at the spray chart, most of his home runs are dead pull down the line, where 330 is perfectly fair. And I think he'll... You know, not everything obviously is going to be a home run that he would have hit at Yankee Stadium, but at Citi Field, I think it looks like most of them would still go out.
Here's a good indicator of where Curtis Granderson is at now. If he hits the ball to left field, he's probably out. Yeah. He's just going to hit a fly ball. Deep center field, or I'd say right center field, he's hit three bombs since 2012. But yeah, everything is either in the alley, Or the majority of them are down the line. You see the little spots where they're lower deck line drive shots, and then you see a lot of these over here are just rockets in the upper deck. Because he does bust it out of there, man. Really, he does. Yeah. He turns on the baseball. And that's just it with him. He's either going to jack it, and he's going to hit it hard when he's up there, or he's going to probably make an out.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest part of Citi Field is right center, where it's like 408, and he doesn't really hit a lot of balls there. So that's really not going to be a concern of his. He just dead pull. And if he does happen to hit a ball in the gap there, you know, I mean, his speed is diminished a little bit, but, you know, there was a couple of years ago he had 21 triples. So he's got some speed. So, hey, if he gets triples, I think we'll all be happy with that also.
Yeah, who wouldn't be? That was in 2007. His worst defensive year, by the way. But still, that was his best offensive output, really. When he was with the Yankees, he hit 41 in 2011 and 43 bombs in 2012. He only hit 7 last year, but he only played 61 games.
Right.
The thing that, and this is the tennis teacher in me, the tennis coach, the tennis pro, when somebody busts their hands, and you know their hands are so important, makes me kind of nervous. You know, that's why I guess I'm not against signing him. I wasn't against it ever. It's just giving him that much money, giving him that fourth year, that kind of drives me crazy. But where do you think he's going to bat in a lineup? Because there's a lot of conjecture and a lot of people are speculating that Chris Young could bat third. Either Young, Wright, and Granderson, any one of those could be 3, 4, 5 hitters, and they're not going to hurt the New York Mets. What do you think about that?
I'm pretty sure he's going to end up batting cleanup. I mean, Wright bats third because that's where you put your best hitter. Wright needs protection. I mean, the past couple of years has been no one batting behind him. They pitched around him all the time. So at least now they're going to have to pitch to Wright. And Terry Collins seems to like the lefty-righty, you know, switch off. So Wright's a righty and Granson's a lefty. So that works well there. So I'm pretty sure he's going to end up hitting cleanup. And probably Eric Young after him. I mean, Chris Young.
Yeah, that could happen.
Yeah.
That could happen. I don't know. I've been in a discussion with a couple of people who are actually knowledgeable about baseball and not groupies. Mm-hmm. And they kind of mentioned the fact that David Wright could possibly even lead off and make it even a better team to set that table. And this would all depend on how Chris Young performs because they're not going to pitch around the leadoff guy. And he's going to get opportunities to really crack the ball.
Yeah, I would be concerned of losing his RBI potential, David Wright's, because you know you want to big hitters in the middle of the lineup to drive in guys, so you'd lose that, and he'd be following Ruben Tejada in the pitcher, so there's not much for him to drive in there. But yeah, I doubt they would put Wright leadoff, but given the lineup, he could theoretically be the best choice. I mean, they don't really have a leadoff hitter. You can maybe put Daniel Murphy there, but he doesn't have much speed. He gets on base, but he's not your prototypical leadoff hitter. If they trade Daniel Murphy, which the Mets apparently are actively shopping him, then Eric Young is your second baseman and he's your leadoff hitter, so that problem goes away.
Yeah, perhaps it does if Eric Young has the type of season he had before. But Tejada was the batted leadoff and did quite well when he was able to do that. He didn't have a very good 2013 season, nor, in my opinion, was he ever even actually given a chance. But you've got him, you've got Young, you've got Wright. Eric Young Jr. and Wright are the only three baseball players on that team currently that could perform at a championship level as a leadoff hitter.
Yeah, Juan Ligares has potential as a leadoff hitter, but he's got to come a long way before he's a professional hitter. Right now, he's just there for his fielding. But he shows some flashes that he knows what he's doing at the plate. And hopefully he can develop into a leadoff hitter if the Mets really still need one.
And where do you put Darno?
Probably.
See, that's the dilemma that you'll have. You know, we forget about Darno. Darno's supposedly a better hitter than he is a catcher. And last season, he was really, he proved to me he can catch. I mean, he is a very good pitch framer. If people would listen to announcers speak that are knowledgeable, they all say the same thing. All of them, even the opposing manager or opposing announcers would say things like, listen, look at the way that kid frames a pitch. Yeah. This is a good thing. And he's always been able to hit. That doesn't usually just stop. So where do you put him?
Well, you know what? If he's starting to hit, he can possibly hit second. Because if it's Eric, if they trade Murphy, because Murphy's your second hitter if he's on the team. But if you trade Murphy and Eric Young is your leadoff hitter, then maybe you bat Darno second.
See, that's the dilemma, too, is when you're trying to piece all this together, how does it fit into a productive early game offensive threat? Because that's where it all went to shimmel last year when you saw these young kids pitching their hearts out and these knuckleheads couldn't score a run, including Captain America.
it's going to be an interesting – I'm not a huge – like, I mean, you got to – you want to put your sluggers in the middle, but I'm not really big on, oh, you have to hit him lead off, hit him third, blah, blah, blah. So I remember when they tried batting Jose Reyes third, which I thought was a pretty good idea. He just flopped because his approach is different. I don't know why his approach would be different as a leadoff hitter than as a third hitter. But I don't know. So I think it's a little overrated where you put players in the lineup. Just my opinion.
Well, that's fair enough. Here's a lineup for you. Just see what you think.
Okay.
David Wright bats leadoff. Ruben Tejada bats second. Chris Young bats third. Curtis Granderson bats cleanup. The first baseman would probably bat fifth.
It's probably going to be Duda.
Yeah. Okay, well, I would bat Duda fifth. I would bat Travis d'Arnaud sixth. I would bat, let's see, I would bat the second baseman at number seven, unless it's Daniel Murphy, but it's not going to be him. So what I would probably do is put Lagares bat seventh. I would bat Young eighth, and I would bat the pitcher obviously ninth, and there I would do it. And then I would give Captain America a chance to drive his runs in because that seems so important. I think he just needs to get on base and let these big boys knock him in and get a couple runs early and finish these things off and give these pitchers a little comfort. But I get what you're saying, but what do you think of that lineup I just gave you?
I don't think I like anything in it except for Granderson cleanup. Because if Eric Young's going to be in that lineup, then he's got to be the leadoff hitter, I think. So because he's your prototypical leadoff hitter, then you can put right back third. Ruben Tejada has not proven that he can be a second hitter. I think he should be eighth. Chris Young, I wouldn't put as a third hitter because he strikes out too much and his average is too low. I like Granderson fourth. I don't like Duda fifth because then you have two lefties in a row. I would want to break that up probably with Chris Young. And sixth and seventh, Lagares and d'Arnaud, I have no problem with. So other than that, I like your lineup.
Well, for me, here's the thing. If there's a left-handed pitcher, then Duda wouldn't be there anyway. It'd probably be Josh Satin. They're not going to get rid of all three of those guys over there.
No, and Josh Satin, he doesn't impress me.
Well, he played okay last season. He was overlooked because everyone was moaning and mourning the loss of Captain America. And they forgot that Josh Satin was playing pretty well for a few weeks there.
He's okay. He's a good guy for a few weeks. But as a starter, I don't like him. He's got those eyebrows. It's just wrong.
Yeah, like Duda wears his hat funny. But here's the thing. Josh Satin, that's his role. Coming up from Las Vegas and filling a need. This is what the New York Mets organization does not have. They don't have enough Band-Aids, and instead they're just stuck with junk, and that's why they're so bad. But honestly, this is going to be a decent lineup. It's a 75-win team, though.
Yeah, 75. As it is, if they don't make any more moves, it'll be a 75-win team. If they make a couple, one or two more moves, pick up a good shortstop or one or two good starters, and they can maybe finish 500.
Okay, well, don't forget that this is a very bad organization, so you're one, two good starters and a shortstop. You're not going to get all of it.
Oh, I know.
And I don't think he's going to spend any more money, and I don't know if he should either. To be honest with you, he might have to do that later. I'm looking – if it were me, and this is just it. If it were me, I'm giving Steven Drew his money because at least the guy can play shortstop. He's better than anything they have. If it were me, then I would probably trade these other yokels like Ike Davis. Daniel Murphy's not a yokel, but and Duda. I'd get rid of all three of those guys, and I would probably go for a front-end one- or two-type pitcher, starting pitcher.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if the Mets trade Davis and Murphy, they might have enough money freed up to sign Steven Drew. But the problem is that would only free up $9 million. So let's say the Mets offered Drew $10 million. apparently the Red Sox have offered him like $10 million for a couple of years. He wants a big score. He wants $15 million a year, which he's not going to get. So if the best he can do is 2 years at $10 million, which is I think the best the Mets would do, he'll just go back to Boston. So I don't see any scenario that he's on the Mets unless the Mets suddenly spend huge, and I don't think they're going to do that. I can't believe we're still talking about Lucas Duda being the starting first baseman.
That's what they're talking about, though.
No, I mean we just in general, not you and me. But it's a travesty. I mean, he's awful, and he's going to be their starting first baseman. He's going to once again be the huge gaping hole, black hole in the middle of the lineup.
Wow.
I don't know what they see in this guy.
They see those moonshots he hits.
In batting practice.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He hit a few in preseason, too, and that's exciting to see. He just has – I don't know what happens to him when a game counts.
Well, yeah, but that's the problem. He doesn't do it when the game counts. So, you know, while we can hit home runs in practice probably. Well, maybe not me, but maybe you can. But he's terrible, and I can't believe he's going to be not only on the team but starting first baseman. Ridiculous. They should get rid of all those guys and just go out and get someone new.
Yeah, I think I could stroke a few because it's it's my backhand.
Right. There you go.
I mean, my stroke is – I've got pictures of it. It's dead. I've played baseball, and I could hit. Okay. Not for big power because I wasn't a big guy when I was playing baseball. But right. I played fast pitch softball for a couple of years. But that's kind of neither here nor there. The thing about Duda, and this is something that – The pro scouts say he has a higher upside than Ike Davis, and the reason is because they say Lucas Duda is mentally more stable than Ike Davis.
Well, let me say this. If they think Lucas Duda is mentally stable, these people who are saying that are mentally unstable. This is a guy who apparently has anxiety attacks when he's at the plate. He's not mentally stable at all. So that's – I don't know who's saying this, but they're mentally handicapped.
Well, they say that he has a higher upside, too.
I don't see any upside. I don't see it. I mean, well, I've watched both of these guys. And again, I'm no expert. It's just my opinion. But Lucas Duda has no upside at all, I think.
I think they like him better than Davis.
Oh, they absolutely do. And plus, he makes less money, which they like a lot also.
Which is what anyone would like, I suppose. But honestly, I cannot see a team – with the two of them on the same roster winning more than 70 games.
No, they're both not good. I mean, I think Davis has an upside. He needs to go somewhere else to start over. But yeah, I think he's going to go somewhere, and it might be Milwaukee because the Brewers just signed, the Mariners just signed Corey Hart. So the Brewers were hoping to re-sign him and it didn't work out, but I think he's going to end up in Milwaukee, and I think he'll hit pretty well.
And maybe so. He might. You know, he just might. I don't know. You know something? When they traded Aoki, I thought they would have traded Ryan Braun, but I don't think anybody wants Ryan Braun at this point. One player that the Mets were interested in, though, Mark, Rafael Furcal signed with the Marlins. Yeah. That was an interesting signing. That took some guts because, you know, it's one thing for a pitcher – with the rotator cuff issue and the Tommy John surgery, it's another thing for someone who throws the ball every day and has to bat, too, every day.
And across the diamond, too.
Ugh. I don't know, man.
I remember, you know, reading the Mets had interest in there. I never wrote about that because I just thought it was nonsense. I didn't think it was ever going to happen, and it didn't. So, yeah, signing, let him go to Miami. Who cares?
You know, the Mets brought him in, and they said they didn't like the way he looked, and that's probably true. But the Marlins are a different issue. They can afford to sign somebody like that.
Right.
I'll tell you what was interesting, though, is the Washington Nationals today. I don't know if you saw this or not, but Jerry Blevins from the Oakland A's was traded to the Washington Nationals for one of their top prospects, a speed burner named Billy Burns, not to be confused, as I said earlier today, with the Bill Burns of the Chicago Black Sox, infamy, the guy who set the whole thing up. What do you think? The Marlins are – I don't understand what in the world they're doing over there. They are sacrificing their future for right now. But yet, two seasons ago when Right Now was the best Now that could have ever had, probably, with this current group, they backed off. I don't understand them.
What, the Marlins, you say?
No, the Washington Nationals.
Oh, the Nationals. Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know a lot about, you know, Billy Burns or Jerry Blevins, but I guess they're just going for it now. And they want to win this year, I think. And they don't really care about the future, it seems.
Two seasons ago, that's all they cared about. But then they realize now that Strasburg's never going to be the same.
Well, I mean, he might.
He's not. But he's just not. He's not the same type of pitcher. He looks like he's lost his confidence, like they shook him by yanking him so early. I think he was ticked off about that, too.
Oh, yeah, he was absolutely annoyed, and he had every right to be. It was asinine. But the Nationals, I mean, I think going into last year, they thought, oh, yeah, we're going to be great again, and they weren't. So I think they're going to go for it, and they're just making whatever moves they can make to bolster the team. And I guess if they do win a World Series, then it's all worth it. And if they go through 5 years of nothingness, then I guess it was worth it.
Well, they're not going to get out of they're not going to make the playoffs.
Too early to say that, I think, at this point. But
they're awful. You know what? Their number. This is how bad. Here's the National League East, in my opinion. It's so awful. The Atlanta Braves will probably pull out of this thing because they're just really good and they're young and they have a lot of talent. So I think that Atlanta is going to win the division. I think the Washington Nationals will probably finish second. I think the Phillies will probably finish third. I think the Marlins will probably finish fourth. And I think the Mets will be dead last. Well, they'll be fighting it out. The Marlins and the Mets will be fighting it out for last place again.
It could be. I mean, I think it's a little too early to start making those predictions. Wouldn't shock me if that's the way it went down. But I still think the Mets would beat out the Marlins. And the Phillies, what are they doing? I mean, on one hand, it looks like maybe, you know, maybe they're going to go for it again, but now suddenly they might trade Hamels and Lee, and they're looking to trade Dominic Brown. So I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a funny bunch up there, man. And we have a lot of Phillies fans who listen to this show, ironically. And boy, that is kind of wild up there. I don't get
it. You know what? Okay.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Ruben Amaro Jr. reminds me a little bit of Omar Minaya. In that,
yeah, I was gonna say,
when he first came in, he made these great deals. Like Minaya got Martinez and Delgado and Beltran, made these great trades, and then suddenly started doing really stupid things. And Ruben Amaro is the same way, you know, trades for Lee, trades for Halliday, trades for Oswald, then suddenly trades Lee when he shouldn't have, trades him away, but then he gets him back, and then does these other strange things. So sounds like Ruben Amaro, who Phillies fans apparently despise. I have some friends who are Phillies fans; they hate him. He just might be – I don't know what he's thinking at this point. But I used to think he was one of the better general managers out there. But now I'm not too sure.
Yeah, he does some funny things. There's no question about that. But, the funny part for me was when he signed Marlon Byrd to 2 years. Mm-hmm. Gave him $8 million each year. I wouldn't have done that.
No, not
Mets fans will crucify me for that because they think he's the second coming. But I think it was just a fluke to get another – or a big year. To get a big contract.
He's 36 years old. There's no way he's going to repeat what he did last year. It's going to be an awful contract, and my guess is they'll probably release him before it's over. Just as I, and that's why he took it so early in this process. He's like, someone's offering me $60 million, I'm taking that. Why would he hold out for anything better?
That's exactly right, man. I tell you what, Mark, great stuff. The second time around sometimes is better than the first.
Yep.
Anyway, you can find Mark Berman over at bloggingmets.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank Alex Hall and Mark Berman for talking a little hot stove baseball with me. Tomorrow night, we'll talk Spurs basketball, Oklahoma City Thunder hoops, and Memphis Grizzly hoops. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.